Welcome to GeekCast with your host, Todd Newton.
What prompted you to go back and revisit Venetian Sunrise?
That's an easy question. The album doesn't sound that good. So back then in 1997-98, that's when I was about 22 years old, that was me trying to record an album all by myself on my own gear at my parents' house in the basement. And while the songs, you know, I like and still play live, production-wise, you know, it was, you know, equivalent to what I would consider a demo now. So, but back then I had like a 8-track recorder and a mixer, and that was it. So I programmed drums, I did all the keyboard, played much of the bass and the guitar, and it was kind of just to see if I could do it. And obviously since then, you know, with every album that I've come out with, the sound and production has, you know, gotten better, and the songwriting's gotten better. Of course, my playing over the years gets better. And the more time went on, the more I keep listening back to that first record and go, man, I wish I could just redo this. And maybe 10 years ago, I threw the idea at my band, and they're like, nah, just keep doing new music. And I'm like, all right. And then after a while, the original CD, Venusian Sunrise, was out of print, sold out, and what was out there was out there. And if I ever wanted to sell something at shows, I just couldn't. So last year, I realized this year would have been the 20-year anniversary. So I figured, heck, just did a blues record. I got nothing else on the horizon. I'm going to finally re-record this album now that my home studio is way better than it was in 1998. And here we are.
Now, as far as the remastered tracks that are on there, how much, I guess, correction were you able to do to those tracks?
Most of it was just adjusting the overall volume and EQ. So I think the remastered version certainly presents a warmer sounding recording than what was originally presented 20 years ago. I would say in my own mind, in my own opinion, that the original recording had a very scooped out kind of lots of high end, lots of bass kind of, you know, sound that everybody was hopefully trying to go for back then. And the engineer that, you know, took a listen to it this time decided to kind of make it a little bit closer to what we're doing now and just kind of bring the levels up to be the same as the rest of the new recordings. But as well as kind of just warm up the audio. That's really all that happened to it. And there's not much else I could have done to it. I don't have the original master tapes or anything. I literally took the last CD of that album that I own, gave it to the guy, and go, what can you do to make this, you know, blend with the rest of this album? So that's what we got.
How did it feel to re-record those tracks after being unhappy that long with the original recordings?
Half of it was relief, and the other half was, you know, it was a scary prospect because my playing is different than it was back then. And I was practicing and playing differently, you know, different things back then. And funny enough, some things I can play better now, and some things I was just scratching my head going, what the hell was 22-year-old Adrian, you know, thinking back then? So some of the challenge was recreating the part, and some of the other challenges were just figuring out, you know, songs that I haven't performed since the recording, what the hell was I doing back then? Meaning I just literally haven't played these on the guitar in that long, and just kind of relearning my own material, which was neat. And certainly, you know, takes me back to the time when I was writing and recording the original stuff. And I would say that kind of my takeaway from the whole project in that regard is, you know, how it made me feel was, I think I still have, in that first album, established an identity of my own on, you know, with the music I was writing. I would say as a guitar player back then, you listen to it and you go, oh, he listened to Joe Satriani, or, oh, he listened to Steve Vai, or whatever it was I was listening to at the time. And that would make sense for a young guitarist to sound like the people he was really into back then. But the songs were all mine. I think I have a more mature and more, you know, more of an identity on the instrument now. But back then I could tell that, man, I think, you know, I established a way of writing and a style of songs that I still, you know, do today.
When you went back to re-record everything, were you tempted to do a lot of, you know, like add a lot of flourishes to the music, maybe make some of it heavier?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, half of me wanted to preserve the stuff that I felt were highlights of the original record. There were a handful of solos that I thought were like, wow, I was really, you know, creating some great melodic, you know, hummable, whistleable, you know, stuff. I'm going to keep that and just recreate it. And then the other parts was me, you know, either making heavy parts heavier or really tackling some of the production issues I had back then, which was, Christ, I only had 8 tracks to record with. And I wasn't smart enough to use a click back then. I didn't even know how the hell I was going to make a click track back then. And so some of the issues were timing-wise. Some of it was just overall sound-wise. I didn't have, you know, good microphones back then. So a lot of it was just, man, getting the thing to sound better than it did 20 years ago, and then somehow marry what I did back then with what I am as a player now. I hope that answers the question.
Absolutely. How big of an impact did working with Stuart Hamm and Glenn Sobel have on the re-recordings?
Well, I would say, well, let's start with Glenn, because he got in on the project first. The neat thing about Glenn, and I've played with him for a number of years before he was with Alice Cooper. He was in my band for about 5 years. And so we played, he's completely familiar with my way of playing and that sort of thing. But beyond that, we're talking about a drummer who's played and recorded with Gary Hoey, a great guitar player, with Jennifer Batten, with Paul Gilbert, with Tony McAlpine. He's played with on a ton of great, you know, guitar records. So he has a very intuitive approach as to what us guitar players like, and he knows by sheer, you know, having the vocabulary and having somebody who's listened to those kinds of fusion instrumental records to know kind of the style and what, you know, goes where as far as, you know, drum parts. So when I have an idea and I try to communicate to him, it's easy for me to go, man, can you do something like Steve Smith did on this record, or something like Dean Castronovo on this record, or Terry Bozzio on this record? And he knows what I'm talking about. So for Glenn, it was easy. Half the material he already knew from playing it live with me. The other half, you know, I'm sure he can eat up for lunch because he's such a badass. But in the studio, it was very cool. He was very prepared. He, you know, comes with notebook and charts, and we'll try a few things out, and if I have an idea, he'll, you know, give it a spin. If he's got an idea, you know, he's, when it comes to drums, he's the boss. So meaning, if he's got an idea, I'm sure as heck gonna want to, you know, at least give it a listen, because I'm sure it comes from, you know, a great background of, you know, experience. When it comes to Stu Hamm, certainly, man, the guy's played with every favorite guitar player, you know, I've got. So the biggest difference in what he brings to the table is, man, I was playing bass on most of these tracks. And while the bass parts aren't that complicated, and it was something I can certainly do, the 2 tracks I had him guest on had a couple sort of bass solo spots. One of them, the Blue Jungle, literally has about an 8-measure bass solo for an outro guitar solo. And then the other one called Drifting Memories has like a little dual guitar and bass tapping part. And he's got to be the guy for that. But when I got his tracks back, so just for people out there in radio land know, you know, I'll record this stuff here in my home studio. I'll literally email drums and backing tracks to Stu. He'll open it up at his home studio. He'll track bass and then email it back, and he'll send me a couple different versions. And And man, when it comes to timing, tone, and a real creative approach to what I had already kind of, you know, laid a foundation for, he knocked it out of the park, you know. I'd like to say I was pleasantly surprised, meaning I wasn't surprised that Stu Hamm was going to be awesome on bass on this record, but I didn't know what he was going to send me. And when the stuff, you know, he sent me, I listened to it. It really, you know, it's what you hope for with a guy of that caliber, that he takes it, knocks it out of the park, and, you know, brings the music to a higher level than it was before. So I wish my budget allowed me to have him on the whole record, but as of now, he's on two tracks.
Let's go backwards a little bit for the uninitiated. How close are you to having a legitimate follow-up to Into the Blue?
A legitimate follow-up to Into the Blue.
Let me rephrase that.
I'm nowhere near being close.
Let me rephrase that. How close are you to having an all-new recording as a follow-up to Into the Blue?
I have zero doubt. So the funniest thing is, and this is not just you, but almost every interview I ever do when I'm doing a record, there's inevitably the question of, you know, hey, well, what's next on the horizon? What do you got, you know, planned? And, man, I've got CDs being delivered today. I've got a, you know, PR that I'm doing. I've got a CD release party in, you know, 2 weeks. I honestly haven't thought about the next project yet. But I can try to answer your question. In my mind, I've thought of a couple things, and inevitably, whatever I try to plan on, you know, when you've got plans, God laughs, you know, I'm sure it'll just be more of me just making the kind of music I make. But I was considering maybe like an acoustic album, to, you know, if anybody who's checked out my music knows, there's always some acoustic music, but there's also, you know, my records have a variety of styles of music on there. Even Into the Blue, which was a blues rock album, has, you know, gospel-type ballads, upbeat blues boogies, and even some Pink Floyd-ish type of, you know, blues, you know, type of British blues-sounding things, Robin Trower-style stuff. It isn't just a straight B.B. King type of record. And previous records to that have always included different kinds of music. So I tend to like to explore different things. Half of it is for the challenge, and half of it is because it's just what comes out. But I think it would be neat to do something maybe just acoustic. One, it's easier to produce. But I got, there's something in me that wants to make a record that, yeah, this is going to sound cornball-y, but, you know, I want something that's going to be deep and impactful. I want to have my Sergeant Pepper's, my The Wall kind of thing. And I'm going to attempt to do that next. But as far as having any song ideas or anything, I've got to zip right now. I just take one project at a time until it's done, and then I kind of move on to the next one.
Working with Casey Clayton on Into the Blue, she obviously knocked it out of the park. Is that someone you're going to work with again in the future?
I would like to. Yeah, she is awesome. She delivers. Great lyric writer, which, you know, when we work together, I'll come up with ideas of lyrics or even a chorus line, and then I'll be like, well, that's all I got. You don't want to hear me write more lyrics. It'll sound like a 12-year-old. And so she'll kind of take the ball and run. And as far as melodies, again, you know, when you're just your own person and you're not working, you know, with somebody else, it's easy for things to get a little contrived and simplistic and that sort of thing. Funny you should bring her up. I think, yes, and I think from the last question, this next album, you know, and I got this question after doing Into the Blue is, you know, what's next? And how come Into the Blue was such a departure from the rest of the records? And I think the going forward is going to be a combination, meaning this prog rock symphonic thing meets 70s era British blues kind of, you know, music. I feel like that's kind of, you know, the old bluesy rock stuff from the 70s is my background and what I grew up listening to. And the prog rock stuff is kind of just part of what comes out and has nothing that I'm in control over. So I assume it'll be somewhere in between. And in my mind, that sounds a bit like a version of David Gilmour, who's practiced a whole lot.
Indeed. How did you become involved with Guitar World as far as writing a column?
Let me try to remember, because it's been a few years now. You know, when I did a lot of my last few records, you know, I did a lot of the PR stuff myself, and so I'd make up press releases, send it out, and they were always cool enough to here and there put stuff out. And when they did, they asked once, or actually I brought it up, I think. I said, man, I've got this lesson, you know, that's on YouTube, and it's going really well. It gets a lot of views, like, I mean, like, lots. And they're like, well, you want to do a lesson for our website? I go, yeah, I'll put it together. I've got a video. I'll make the guitar, you know, notation for it and send you some copy. And it was a lesson called The Scale That Will Change Your Life, which is, you know, by today's standards, people will go, hey, that's clickbait. I knew it was a salacious title, but it really was a scale that changed my life. If anybody out there is listening, go check it out. But anyways, that was the lesson. And it turned out to be the most popular, most viewed, and shared lesson of all time for Guitar World magazine and their online edition. And they're like, send us more of those. And I'm like, all right. So that's kind of how that began. And that video easily is over 1 million views and probably gets somewhere around 1,000 views a day.
Once you begin the actual tour cycle for this re-release, do you have plans set in motion at this point?
Man, touring as an independent artist is pretty tough. It's going to be mostly limited to this. You know, I'm in Los Angeles, and so I'll be doing dates in Southern California. And then generally, if I'm visiting anywhere outside of there, it's for guitar workshops, guitar festivals, things like that. So a lot of that is, you know, has to do with sponsors and events that are sort of guitar related. As far as things on the book now, nothing really set just yet, just a CD release party here in town in Los Angeles at the Baked Potato on July 10th. But, I'm sure I'll be gearing up to do a whole lot more live shows pretty darn soon.
Stay tuned for more Geekcasts from www.bigmusicgeek.com.